He turned his spoon upside down and stuck it in his mouth, seeming unaffected.
It's not hard to see why.
I wondered what about my outward appearance made it so obvious. Maybe that's why the town hadn't stopped blaming Mama and me for my grandparents' mistakes. Maybe I looked like someone they should hate.
Why do you look embarrassed?
He asked. I guess I was hoping you didn't know about my family and the smelter.
Oh, that. My aunt told me years ago.
Is that what you think?
That they're mean to you because of your family history with the town?
Why else?
Catherine.
My name sounded like a soft laugh tumbling from his mouth.
They're jealous of you.
I frowned and shook my head. What could they possibly be jealous of me for? We barely have 2 pennies to rub together.
Have you seen yourself?
He asked. I blushed and looked down. Only Dad had ever complimented my looks.
You're all the things they're not.
I crossed my arms on the table and watched the warm hue of the corner streetlight blink between the branches of a tree. It was a strange feeling, wanting to hear more and hoping he'd talk about anything else. What they said doesn't bother you? I asked, surprised.
It used to.
Now it doesn't?
My Uncle John says people can only make us angry if we let them, and if we let them, we give them power.
That's pretty profound.
I listen to him sometimes, even though he thinks I don't.
What else does he say? He didn't hesitate.
That you either get good at rising above and meeting ignorance with education, or you get really good at being bitter.
I smiled. Elliot spoke his uncle's words with respect. So you just choose not to let what people say get to you?
Pretty much.
How? I said, leaning in. I was genuinely curious, hoping he would unveil some magical secret that would end the misery Presley and her friends loved invoking in me.
Oh, I get angry. It gets old when people feel the need to tell me their great-grandmother was a Cherokee princess, or that stupid joke about if I got my name from the first thing my parents saw after they walked out of a teepee. I can get heated when someone calls me chief, when I see people in headdresses outside of our ceremonies. But my uncle says we should either be compassionate and educate or leave them alone in their ignorance. Besides, there's too much ignorance in the world to let it all get to me. If it did, all I'd ever feel is anger, and I don't want to be like my mom.
Is that why you were punching our tree? He looked down, either unwilling or unable to answer the question.
A lot bothers me,
I grumbled, sitting back. I glanced at the clones, dressed in cut-off denim shorts and floral blouses, just variations of the same shirt from the same store. Dad tried to make sure I had the right clothes and the right backpack, but year after year, Mama watched as more of my childhood friends faded away. She began to wonder what we'd done wrong, and then I began to wonder too. The truth was, I hated Presley for hating me. I didn't have the heart to tell Mama that I would never fit in. I wasn't vile enough for those small-town, small-minded girls. It took me a long time to figure out that I didn't really want to, but at 15, I sometimes wondered if it was better than being alone. Dad couldn't be my best friend forever. I took a bite of my sherbet.
Stop, Elliot said.
Stop what? I asked, the cool, orangey goodness melting on my tongue.
Looking at them like you wish you were sitting over there. You're better than that.
I smirked, amused. You think I don't know that? He swallowed whatever he was about to say next. So, what's your story? I asked.
My parents are going on a couples retreat for 6 weeks. Some kind of intense counseling. One last stab at it, I guess.
What happens if they stab and miss? He picked at his napkin.
I'm not sure. Mom talked about just the two of us moving back here as a last resort. That was a year or two ago, though.
What do they fight about? He sighed.
My dad's drinking. Dad not taking out the trash. Mom nagging. Mom spending too much time on Facebook. Dad says he drinks because she ignores him. Mom says she's on Facebook all the time because he never talks to her. Basically the stupidest stuff you could imagine, and it escalates like they've been walking around all day waiting for the other to set them off. Now that he's lost his job, again, it's worse. Apparently the therapist said Dad needs to be a victim and Mom enjoys emasculating him, whatever that means.
They told you that?
They're not the fight behind closed doors type of parents.
That blows. I'm sorry.
I don't know,
he said, looking at me from under his glasses.
This isn't so bad.
I squirmed in my seat. We should probably, we should go. Elliot stood, waiting for me to slide out of the booth. He followed me out, so I wasn't sure if he noticed Presley and the clones covering their insults and giggles with their hands. When he stopped next to the trash can behind their booth, I knew he had.
What are you laughing at?
He asked. I tugged on his t-shirt, begging him with my eyes to keep walking. Presley rolled her shoulders and lifted her chin, thrilled to be acknowledged. Just how cute is Kit Kat with her new boyfriend? It's precious how you don't want to hurt her feelings. I mean, I have to assume that's what... She gestured to us. This is... Elliot walked over to their table, and the girls' giggles quieted. He knocked on the wood and sighed.
You know why you'll never outgrow the need to make others feel like shit so you can feel better, Presley?
She narrowed her eyes at him, watching him like a snake ready to strike. Elliot continued,
Because it's a temporary high. It never lasts, and you'll never stop, because it's the only happiness you'll ever have in your sad, pathetic life that revolves around manicures and highlight in your hair. Your friends? They don't like you. No one ever will, because you don't like yourself. So every time you give Catherine a hard time, she'll know. She'll know why you're doing it, just like your friends will know. Just like you'll know that you're overcompensating. Every time you throw insults Catherine's way, it's that much less of a secret.
He made eye contact with each clone and then Presley.
Have the day you deserve.
He returned to the door and held it open, gesturing for me to walk through. We navigated the parked cars until we were on the other side of the lot and headed back toward our neighborhood. The street lamps were on, the gnats and mosquitoes buzzing beneath the bright bulbs. The quiet made the sounds of our shoes against the pavement more prominent.
That was, I began, searching for the right word. Legendary. I could never tell someone off like that.
Well, I don't live here, so that makes it easier. And that wasn't entirely mine.
What do you mean?
It's from a scene in Detention Club Musical. Don't tell me you didn't watch it when you were little.
I stared at him in disbelief, and then laughter erupted from my throat.
The movie that came out when we were 8?
I watched it every day for like a year and a half.
I giggled. Wow, I can't believe I didn't catch it.
I'm just glad Presley didn't. That would have made my monologue much less intimidating.
I laughed again, and this time Elliot did too. As the laughter died down, he nudged me with his elbow.
Do you really have a boyfriend from out of town?
I was glad it was dark. My entire face felt like it had caught fire.
No.
Good to know,
he said with a grin. I told them that once in middle school, hoping they would leave me alone. He stopped, looking down at me with an amused smile.
I'm guessing it didn't work.
I shook my head,
every instance of their badgering coming to mind like a barely healed wound breaking open. Elliot sniffed and touched the tip of his nose with a scraped knuckle. "Doesn't it hurt?" I asked. The laughter and grins faded. A dog barked low and lonely from a few blocks away. An air conditioning unit clicked and shuddered. An engine revved, probably the older high schoolers dragging Main Street. As the quiet surrounded us, the light in Elliot's eyes disappeared. "I'm sorry. That's none of my business."
"Why not?"
he asked. I shrugged, continuing our trek. "I don't know. It just seems personal."
"I've been telling you about my parents and all their problems, and you think my bloody knuckles are personal?"
I shrugged.
"I lost my temper. Took it out on your oak tree. See? No magic trick. I still get angry."
I slowed. "Frustrated about your parents?" He shook his head. I could tell he didn't want to say more, so I didn't push. On our quiet side of town, walking along the last road within city limits, the world as Elliot and I knew it was ending, even if we hadn't quite realized it yet. Houses lined each side of the street like little islands of life and activity. The lit windows broke up the darkness between street lamps. Occasionally a shadow would skirt across one of them, and I wondered what living on their islands was like. If they were enjoying their Friday night watching a made-for-television movie snuggled on the couch. The worry of paying bills was probably far, far away. When we arrived at my gate, my island was dark and quiet. I wished for that warm yellow glow from the windows and the surrounding homes, the flicker from a television screen. Elliot reached into his pockets, making the change inside jingle.
"Are they home?"
I looked to the garage, seeing Dad's Buick in the garage and Mama's Lexus behind it. "Looks that way."
"I hope I didn't make things a lot worse for you with Presley."
I waved him away. "Presley and I go way back. That's the first time anyone has stood up for me. I'm not sure she knew what to do with it."
"Hopefully she keeps it safe next to the stick in her ass."
A loud laugh burst from my throat, and Elliot couldn't hide his satisfaction at my response.
"Do you have a cell number?"
"No."
"No? Really? Or do you just not want to give me your number?"
I shook my head and breathed out a laugh. "Really? Who's going to call me?" He shrugged.
"I was gonna, actually."
"Oh." I lifted the gate latch, pushing my way through, hearing the high-pitched sound of metal rubbing on metal. It closed behind me with a click, and I turned to face Elliot, resting my hands on the top of the elegantly bent iron. He glanced up at the house like it was just another house, unafraid. His bravery warmed something deep inside of me.
"We're practically neighbors, so
I'm sure I'll see you around," he said. "Yeah, definitely. I mean, probably. It's likely," I said, nodding.
"What are you doing tomorrow? Do you have a summer job?"
I shook my head. "Mama wants me to help around the house in the summers."
"Is it okay if I swing by? I'll pretend not to take pictures of you."
"Sure, barring anything weird with my parents."
"Okay, then,"
he said, standing a bit taller, his chest puffing out a bit. He took a few steps backward.
"See you tomorrow."
He turned for home, and I did the same, walking slowly up the steps. The noise the warped wooden slats that made up our porch made under the pressure of my 110 pounds seemed loud enough to alert my parents, but the house stayed dark. I pushed through the extra-wide door, silently cursing the creaking hinges. Once inside, I waited. No muffled conversation or footsteps. No hushed anger from upstairs. No whispering in the walls. Each step seemed to scream my arrival as I climbed the stairs to the upper level. I kept to the middle, not wanting to brush up against the wallpaper. Mama wanted us to be careful about the house, as if it were another member of our family. I stepped softly down the hall, pausing when a board in front of my parents' room creaked. After no signs of movement, I made my way to my room. My bedroom's wallpaper had horizontal stripes, and even the pink and cream colors didn't keep it from feeling like a cage. I kicked off my shoes and padded through the darkness to the single-paned window. The white paint on the frame was chipping, creating a small cluster on the floor. Outside, two stories down, Elliot came in and out of view as he passed under the streetlights. He was walking toward his Aunt Lee's house, looking down at his phone while he passed the Fentons' dirt plot. I wondered if he'd come home to a quiet house, or if Miss Lee would have every light burning, if she would be fighting with her husband, or making up, or waiting up for Elliot. I turned to my dresser, seeing the jewelry box Dad had bought me for my 4th birthday. I lifted the lid, and a ballerina began to twirl in front of a small oval mirror set against baby pink felt fabric. The few details painted on her face had worn away, leaving only two black spots for eyes. Her tutu was mashed. The spring she was perched on was bent, forcing her to lean a little too far over to the side as she pirouetted, but the slow, haunting chimes still pinged perfectly. The wallpaper was peeling like the paint, drooping from the top in some places, peeled up from the baseboard in others. The ceiling was stained in one corner with a brown splotch that seemed to grow every year. My white iron-framed bed squeaked with the slightest movement, and my closet doors didn't slide the way they used to. But my room was my own space, a place where the darkness couldn't reach. My family's status as the town pariahs and Mama's anger all seemed so far away when I was within those walls, and I hadn't felt that way anywhere else until I sat at a sticky table across from a bronzed boy and his big brown eyes, watching me with no sign of sympathy or disdain. I stood at the window, already knowing Elliot would be out of sight. He was different, more than just odd. But he had found me, and for the moment, I liked not feeling lost. Chapter 2. Catherine.
Catherine!
Dad called from downstairs. I trotted down each step. He was at the bottom, smiling.
You're awfully chipper today. What's up with that?
I paused on the second to last stair. It's summer?
Nope. I've seen your it's summer smile before. This is different.
I shrugged, taking a crispy slice of bacon from the napkin in his open palm. My only response was a series of crunching, to which Dad scoffed.
I have an interview at 2 today, but I thought maybe we could go ride around the lake.
I stole another piece of bacon, crunching. Dad made a face. Kind of might have plans. Dad raised an eyebrow. With Elliot. The two lines between his brows deepened.
Elliot.
He spoke the name as if it would jog his memory. I smiled. Lee's nephew. The weird boy in our backyard?
The one who was punching the tree?
I stumbled over my response until Dad finally interjected.
That's right. I saw him,
Dad said. But you asked me if he was tearing up the yard.
I didn't want to worry you, Princess. I'm not sure I'm okay with you spending time with a boy who assaults trees.
We don't know what's going on with him at home, Dad. Dad touched my shoulder.
I don't want my daughter getting mixed up with whatever that is, either.
I shook my head. After last night, maybe his aunt and uncle are saying the same about our family. Pretty sure the whole neighborhood heard.
I'm sorry, I didn't realize.
It was mostly her, I grumbled.
It was both of us.
He told Presley off last night.
The tree boy? Wait, what do you mean, last night?
I swallowed. We walked to Brahms after Mama got home.
Oh, Dad said. I see. And he was okay? I mean, he didn't try to punch Presley or anything, did he?
I giggled. No, Dad.
Sorry, I didn't come in to say goodnight. We were up late.
Someone knocked on the door. Three times, and then two.
Is that him?
Dad asked. I don't know. We didn't really have a set time, I said, watching Dad make his way to the door. He puffed out his chest before he pulled on the knob, revealing Elliot looking freshly showered, his damp hair wavy and glistening. He held his camera with both hands, even though the strap was around his neck.
Mr., Calhoun, Dad said, gripping Elliot's hand to give it a firm shake.
He turned to me.
I thought you said you met him last night.
He looked to Elliot.
You didn't even get her last name.
Elliot smiled, looking sheepish.
I might be a little nervous to meet you.
Dad's eyes softened, and his shoulders relaxed.
Did you know her first name is Princess?
Dad! I hissed. Dad winked at me.
Be home by dinner.
Yes, sir,
Elliot said, stepping to the side. I passed Dad, giving him a quick peck on the cheek before leading Elliot down the porch steps and out the gate.
It's already hot,
Elliot said, wiping his forehead.
This summer's gonna be brutal.
You're here early. What are you up to? I asked. He nudged me with his elbow.
Hanging out with you.
What's with the camera?
I thought we could go to the creek today.
He held up his camera.
To take pictures.
Of the creek? He smiled.
You'll see.
We walked north toward Brahms and turned a street before. The road turned to red dirt and gravel, and we walked one more mile up to Deep Creek. It was narrow, and apart from a few 10-foot sections, I could jump over it with a running start. Elliot led me along the bank until he found a section running over stones. He stopped talking to me and started tinkering with his camera. Elliot snapped one picture quickly, checked the settings, and then took several more. After watching him for an hour, I walked around on my own, waiting until he was satisfied.
Beautiful,
he said simply.
Let's go.
Where?
The park.
We headed back toward Juniper, stopping at Brahms on the way for ice water. I pressed my thumb to my shoulder, leaving a temporary white spot before it turned red.
Sunburn?
Elliot asked. I always do in June. Burn once and I'm good for the summer.
I wouldn't know about that,
he teased. I scanned his bronze skin with envy. Something about it looked soft and touchable, and those thoughts made me feel uncomfortable because I'd never had them before.
We should keep sunscreen on you. That's gonna hurt.
Nah, I'll be fine. You'll see.
I'll see what?
I just meant that I'll be okay, I said, pushing him off the curb. He fought a smile and then pushed me back. I lost my balance too close to the fence, and my blouse somehow ended up hooking and twisting on a protruding wire. I yelped, and Elliot held out his hands as the wire sliced through the thin fabric.
Whoa,
he said, reaching for me. I'm caught, I said, bent in half. My fingers were woven into the chain link, trying not to fall over and rip my shirt further.
I gotcha,
he said, unhooking the fabric from the fence.
Almost got it, he said, straining. I'm so sorry. That was stupid.
My shirt released, and Elliot helped me to stand up straight. I checked the rip and chuckled.
It's fine. I'm a klutz.
He winced.
I know better than to put my hands on a girl.
You didn't hurt me.
No, I know. It's just that my dad gets mad sometimes and just loses it. I'll wonder when that started or if he was always that way. I don't want to be like him.
Mama loses her temper, too.
Does she hit your dad?
I shook my head. No. His jaw worked under his skin, and then he turned for the park, gesturing for me to follow. He was quiet for the next few blocks until we heard the faint laughter and squealing of children. Beetle Park had been neglected, but was still overrun with tiny humans when we arrived. I wasn't sure how Elliot was going to get any pictures without a slobbering, snotty, dirty-faced munchkin in his shot, but he somehow found beauty in the rusted barrels and splintered seesaw that no one played on. After an hour, the moms and daycare workers began to corral the kids, calling them back to the vans for lunch. Within minutes, we were alone. Elliot offered me a swing, and I sat, giggling when he pulled me back and then pushed forward, running beneath me. He picked up his camera, and I covered my face. No!
It looks worse when you fight it.
I just don't like it. Please stop. Elliot let the camera rest against his chest, shaking his head.
That's weird.
Well, I guess I'm weird then.
No, it's just, that's like the setting sun wishing it wasn't so beautiful.
I swung back and forth, pressing my lips together in a hard line so I didn't smile. Once again, I wasn't sure if he was complimenting me or if it was just the way he saw the world.
When's your birthday?
Elliot asked. I frowned, caught off guard. February? Why? He chuckled.
February what?
Second. When's yours?
November 16th. I'm a Scorpio.
You're, He looked up, thinking.
Oh, you're an Aquarius. Air sign. Very mysterious.
A nervous laugh tumbled from my lips. I have no idea what that means.
It means we should stay far, far away from each other, according to my mom. She likes all that stuff.
Astrology?
Yeah,
he said, seeming embarrassed by sharing that tidbit. Is astrology a Cherokee thing? Sorry if that's a dumb question.
No,
he said, shaking his head.
It's just for fun.
Elliot sat on the swing next to mine, pushing back and then using his legs to swing forward. He grabbed the chain of my swing, taking me along for the ride. I started to use my legs, too, and before long I was so high that the swing was bouncing when I got to the top. I stretched my toes toward the sky, remembering that same exhilarating feeling as when I was little. As our swing slowed, I watched Elliot watch me. He held out his hand, but I hesitated.
It doesn't have to mean anything, he said. Just take it.
I hooked his fingers with mine. Our hands were sweaty and slippery and felt awful, but it was the first time I'd held a boy's hand besides my dad's, and it sent a ridiculous thrill through me that I'd never admit to. I didn't think Elliot was that cute or that funny, but he was sweet. His eyes seemed to see everything, and yet he still wanted to spend time with me. Do you like your aunt and uncle? I asked. Do you like it here? He peered over at me, squinting from the sun.
For the most part. Aunt Lee is... She carries a lot around with her.
Like what? I asked.
They don't talk about it to me, but from what I've heard over the years... The Youngbloods weren't receptive to Aunt Lee at first. Uncle John just kept loving her until they were.
Because she's... I began, stumbling over the words. He chuckled.
It's okay. You can say it. My grandparents had a hard time with it, too. Aunt Lee is white.
I pressed my lips together, trying not to laugh.
What about you? Are you really leaving after graduation?
I nodded. Oak Creek is okay, I said, drawing circles in the sand with my sandal. I just don't want to stay here forever. or a second longer than I have to.
I'm going to travel with my camera, take pictures of the earth and sky and everything in between. You could come with me.
I laughed. And do what?
He shrugged. Be the in-between.
I thought about what Dad had said earlier. I wanted to prove him wrong. I smirked. I'm not sure I want to travel the world with someone who punches trees.
Oh, that.
I elbowed him. Yes, that. What was that about?
That would be one of the times I didn't listen to Uncle John's philosophy on anger.
Everyone gets angry. It's better to take it out on a tree. Maybe just wear boxing gloves next time.
He breathed out a laugh. My aunt has mentioned installing a punching bag downstairs.
That's a healthy outlet, if you ask me.
So if you're not going to travel the world with me, what will you do?
I'm not sure, I said. We've only got 3 years left. I feel like I should at least have an idea. And at the same time, it sounds crazy to think that I should at 15. I looked away, frowning. It's stressful.
Just hold my hand for now. Catherine?
I looked up to see Owen letting my hand slip away from Elliot's. Hey, I said, standing. Owen took a few steps, wiping sweat from his brow.
Your dad said you might be here.
His eyes kept bouncing between Elliot and me. This is Elliot. He lives down the street, I said. Elliot stood and held out his hand. Owen didn't move, warily watching the tall, dark stranger. Owen, I hissed. Owen's blonde eyelashes fluttered. He shook Elliot's hand and then returned his attention to me.
Oh, sorry. So I'm leaving for camp tomorrow. You want to come over tonight?
Oh, I said, glancing up at Elliot. We sort of have plans. Owen frowned.
But I'm leaving tomorrow.
I know, I said, envisioning hours of munching on popcorn while Owen gunned down countless space mercenaries. You can come with us.
My mom won't let me go anywhere tonight. She wants me home early.
I'm really sorry, Owen. He turned, frowning at me.
Yeah. See you in a couple of weeks, I guess.
Yes, absolutely. Have fun at science camp. Owen flicked his sandy hair out of his eyes, stuffed his fists in his pockets, and walked in the opposite direction of my house, toward his street. Owen lived in one of the nicer neighborhoods, his house tucked into a woodsy cul-de-sac. I'd spent one-third of my childhood there, sitting on one of his beanbags, vegging out in front of the TV. I wanted to spend time with him before he left, but Elliot had a lot of layers, and I only had a few weeks of summer break to peel them.
Who was that?
Elliot asked. For the first time, the unaffected, small smile that had been perpetually on his face was absent. Owen. He's a friend from school. One of two. He's in love with my friend Minka. We've been hanging out since first grade. He's like this avid gamer. He tells Minka and me to watch him play. He's not much of a two-player fan. He doesn't like waiting on us to figure it out. One corner of Elliot's mouth turned up.
One of three.
Pardon?
Owen is one of your three friends.
Oh, that's a nice thing to say. I looked down at my watch to hide the flush of my cheeks, noticing the time. The sun had stretched our shadows to the east. We'd spent 2 hours at Beetle Park. We should probably eat something. Want to come over for a sandwich? Elliot smiled and followed me through the shade to Juniper. We didn't talk much, and he didn't reach for my hand again, but my palm tingled where his had been. I stopped at the gate, hesitating. Mama's car was parked behind the Buick, and I could hear them arguing.
I can make a sandwich at home, Elliot said, or I can come in with you. Your call.
I glanced back at him. I'm sorry.
It's not your fault.
Elliot tucked some hair behind his ear and then made the decision for me. He pushed back through the gate and walked toward his aunt's, wiping sweat from his temple and then readjusting his camera strap. I walked up the porch steps slowly, cringing when they lowered their voices. "I'm home," I said, closing the door behind me. I walked into the dining room to see Dad sitting at the table, his fingers interlaced in front of him.
"You didn't get the job?"
Dad's underarms were stained with sweat, his face ashen. He attempted a small smile.
"There were 100 other guys up for that position, all younger and smarter than your old dad."
"I don't believe that for a minute," I said, walking past Mama to the kitchen. I made 2 glasses of ice water and then sat one in front of him.
"Thanks, Princess,"
he said, taking a big gulp. Mama rolled her eyes and crossed her arms.
"Listen to me. It could work. We have all this room, and..."
"I said no, honey,"
Dad said, sounding final.
"No tourists come to this town. There's nothing to see except closed businesses and a Pizza Hut. The only people who stay the night are coming off the interstate or oil guys. They're not going to pay extra for a bed and breakfast."
"There's only one hotel," Mama snapped. "It's full almost every night."
"Not every night,"
Dad said, patting his brow with a napkin.
"And even if we got the overflow, it wouldn't be enough to sustain a business."
"Dad," I said, "aren't you feeling well?"
"I'm okay, Catherine. Just got too hot today."
"Take another drink," I said, pushing his glass toward him. Mama wrung her hands.
"You know, this is something I've always wanted to do with this house."
"It takes money to start a business," Dad said, "and I'm not comfortable having strangers sleeping next to Catherine every night."
"You just said we wouldn't have guests," Mama snapped.
"We won't, Mavis. If this house was in San Francisco or anywhere with a tourist attraction, it would. But we're in the middle of Oklahoma, not a thing within 2 hours of us."
"Two lakes," she said.
"People who go to the lake either make a day trip or camp. This isn't Missouri. We're not on the edges of Table Rock Lake with Branson 10 minutes away. It's not the same."
"It could be if we advertised, if we got the city to work with us."
"To do what, exactly? You can't argue this. It's just not fiscally responsible to start that kind of business when we're already facing being a month behind on bills."
Dad glanced at me as if it were an afterthought.
"I could get a job," I said.
Dad began to speak, but Mama cut him off.
"She could work for me at the Juniper Bed and Breakfast."
"No, honey," Dad said, exasperated. "You couldn't pay her for a long time, and it would defeat the point. Look at me. You know this isn't a good idea. You know it's not."
"I'm calling the bank in the morning. Sally will give us a loan. I know she will."
Dad slammed his fist on the table.
"Damn it, Mavis. I said no."
Mama's nostrils flared.
"You got us into this. If you'd done your job, they wouldn't have let you go."
"Mama," I warned.
"This is your fault," she said, ignoring me. "We're going to be penniless, and you were supposed to take care of us. You promised. Now you're staying home all day while I'm the sole income. We'll have to sell the house. Where are we going to go? How did I get stuck with such a screw-up? Mama!" I yelled. "That's enough!"
Mama's hands shook while she picked at her nails and fidgeted with her messy hair. She turned on her heel and rushed up the stairs, sniffling as she climbed. Dad looked up at me, embarrassed and remorseful.
"She didn't mean it, Princess."
I sat down. "She never does," I grumbled under my breath. Dad's mouth pulled to the side.
"She's just stressed."
I reached across the table, grabbing his clammy hand.
"Just her?"
"You know me,"
he winked.
Falling is easy. The hard part is getting back up. I'll figure this out. Don't you worry.
He rubbed his shoulder. I smiled at him. I'm not worried. I'll walk down to Brahms and see if they're hiring.
Don't get your britches in a bunch. We'll start talking about that next month. Maybe.
I really don't mind.
What did you eat for lunch?
He asked. I simply shook my head and Dad frowned.
Best get in there and make yourself something. I'm going upstairs to calm your mama.
I nodded, watching him struggle to get up and then nearly lose his balance. I held his arm until he was steady. Dad, are you sunsick?
I'll take this with me,
he said, picking up the water. I watched him slowly climb the stairs, crossing my arms across my middle. He looked older, feebler. No daughter wants to see her dad as anything but invincible. Once he reached the top, I went into the kitchen and opened the refrigerator. It kicked on, humming while I searched for lunch meat and cheese. No meat, but I found one last slice of cheese and some mayonnaise. I pulled it out of the fridge and looked for bread. Nothing. A full box of saltines was in the cabinet, so I slathered on some mayo and tore apart the cheese in small squares, trying to spread it out across as many crackers as I could. Mama had been so worried she'd forgotten to go to the store. I wondered how many more times we could afford to go. Dad's dining chair creaked when I sat. I picked up the first saltine and took a bite, the cracker crunching loudly in my mouth. Dad and Mama weren't fighting. She wasn't even crying, which she usually did when she was this stressed, and I began to wonder what was going on up there and why she wasn't at work. The chandelier above me trembled, and then the pipes began to whine. I exhaled, knowing Dad was probably running a bath to help Mama calm her nerves. I finished my lunch and washed my plate, then sauntered outside to the porch swing. Elliot was already swinging there, holding two large brownies wrapped in cellophane and two bottles of Coke. He held them up. Dessert? I sat next to him, feeling relaxed and happy for the first time since he'd left. I pulled open the clear plastic and bit into the brownie, humming in satisfaction. Your aunt? He squinted one eye and smiled.
She lies to her women's auxiliary group at church and says it's her recipe.
It's not? She's made them for us before. The whole neighborhood raves about Lee's brownies.
It's my mom's. Aunt Lee keeps me very happy, so I don't rat her out.
I smiled. I won't tell a soul.
I know,
he said, pushing off with his feet.
That's what I like about you.
Which is what, exactly?
Did you tell anyone about my uncle losing his job?
Of course not.
That.
He leaned back, cradling his head in his hands.
You can keep a secret.
Chapter 3. Elliot. I visited Catherine next day, and the next, and every day for 2 weeks. We walked for ice cream, walked to the creek, walked to the park, just walked. If her parents were fighting, she wasn't home to see it. And if I could do nothing else to make that situation better, she was happy about that. Catherine was probably sitting on the porch swing like she did every afternoon, waiting for me to wander to her section of the neighborhood. I'd been mowing lawns all morning, trying to get all my accounts caught up before the dark, puffy clouds that had begun to darken the southwestern sky reached Oak Creek. Each time I came home for more water, Uncle John was glued to the news, listening to the meteorologist's report on pressure changes and wind gusts. Thunder had been rolling for the last hour, growing louder every 10 minutes or so. After my last yard, I ran home and showered, grabbed my camera, and tried very hard not to look like I was rushing when I reached Catherine's porch. Her thin, sleeveless blouse stuck in different spots to her glistening skin. She picked at the frayed edges of her jean shorts with what was left of her chewed nails. I struggled to breathe in the muggy air, glad for the sudden chill in the air as the sky darkened and the temperature dipped. Leaves began to hiss as the cool wind from the storm weaved through and blew away the heat that had danced above the asphalt just moments before. Mr. Calhoun rushed out, straightening his tie.
I have a couple of interviews, Princess. See you this evening.
He trotted down the stairs only to hurry back up. After planting a quick kiss on her cheek and then giving me a look, he ran for the Buick and backed out, stomping on the gas. The swing bounced and the chain shuddered when I sat next to Catherine. I pushed off with my feet, sending us in an uneven back and forth. Catherine sat quietly, her long, elegant fingers catching my attention. I wished I could hold her hand again, but I wanted it to be her idea this time. The chains of the porch swing creaked in a relaxing rhythm, and I leaned my head back, looking up at the cobwebs on the ceiling and noting the pile of dead bugs inside the porch light.
"Camera?" Catherine asked.
I patted the bag.
"Of course." "You've taken hundreds of pictures of grass, the water flowing at Deep Creek, the swings, the slide, trees, and the railroad tracks. We've talked about your parents a little bit, and mine a lot. At length about Presley and the clones, football, our dream colleges, and where we want to be in 5 years. What's the plan for today?" she asked.
I grinned.
"You?"
"Me?"
"It's going to rain. I thought we'd stay in."
"Here?" she asked. I stood and held out my hand. So much for waiting for her to do it.
"Come with me."
"What? Like a photo shoot?
I don't really like getting my picture taken."
She didn't take my hand, so I hid my fist in my pocket, trying not to die of embarrassment.
"No pictures today. I wanted to show you something."
"What?"
"The most beautiful thing I've ever photographed."
Catherine followed me out the gate and down the street to my aunt and uncle's house. It was the first time in weeks we had walked somewhere without our clothes being soaked with sweat. Aunt Lee's house smelled like fresh paint and a cheap air freshener. The fresh vacuum markings in the calico carpet told the short story of a busy housewife and no children. The ivy stencils and plaid came straight from 1991. But Aunt Lee took pride in her house and spent hours a day making sure it was immaculate. Catherine reached for a painting on the wall of a native woman with long, dark hair adorned with a feather. She stopped just before her fingers met with a canvas.
"Is this what you wanted to show me?"
"It is beautiful, but not what I brought you here to see."
"She's so elegant, so lost, not just beautiful. The kind that makes you want to cry."
I smiled, watching Catherine stare at the painting in awe.
"She's my mother."
"Your mother?
She's stunning."
"Aunt Lee painted it."
"Wow,"
Catherine said, looking over painted plates with similar styles. Landscapes and people, all looking like any minute the wind would make the grass sway or dark hair would brush against rich, bronze skin.
"All of them?"
Elliot nodded. The flat-screen television hanging high on the wall was on, the news anchor talking to an empty room before we'd arrived.
"Is Lee at work?" Catherine asked.
"She leaves the TV on when she's gone. She says it makes the burglars think someone is home."
"What burglars?" she asked.
I shrugged. "I don't know. Any burglars, I guess." We walked past the TV down a dim hall to a brown door with a brass knob. I opened it. A rush of air with a subtle hint of mildew blew Catherine's bangs from her eyes.
"What's down there?"
she asked, peeking down into the darkness.
"My room."
A steady beat sounded on the roof, and I turned to look out the front windows, seeing pea-sized pellets of ice bouncing in the wet grass. As they fell, they grew bigger. A white ball the size of a half dollar made contact with the sidewalk, breaking into a few pieces. As quickly as the hail came, it vanished and melted like I'd imagined it. She returned her attention to the darkness. She seemed overly nervous.
You sleep down there?
Mostly. Want to see? She swallowed.
You first.
I chuckled.
Chicken.
I tromped down the steps and then disappeared into the darkness, reaching up exactly where I knew a string would be for the single bare bulb above.
Elliot?
Catherine called from halfway down the stairs. Her call informed me with her tiny, nervous voice made something inside of me click. I only wanted her to feel safe with me.
Hang on, I'm getting the light.
After a click and a jingle, the bulb hanging from the ceiling illuminated our surroundings. Catherine descended the remaining stairs slowly. She looked down at the large green shag carpet centered in the middle of the concrete floor.
It's ugly, but it's better than stepping on a cold floor first thing in the morning, I said.
She peered around at the small love seat, a console television, a desk with a computer, and the futon I slept on.
Where's your bed? She asked.
I pointed to the futon.
It lays flat. It doesn't look long enough.
It's not, I said simply, pulling my camera out of the bag and pinching the memory card from the bottom. I sat in the lawn chair that Uncle John had bought for me to use at the desk Aunt Lee found sitting on the side of the road, and pushed the tiny square in my hand into a slit in the desktop.
Elliot?
I just have to pull it up. I clicked the mouse a few times, and then a faint, high-pitched wail sounded above us. I froze.
Is that the...
Is it the tornado siren? I said, scrambling to stand and then grabbing her hand, pulling her to the top of the stairs. The sound was coming from the television. A meteorologist stood in front of a map splashed with reds and greens. A severe thunderstorm warning had been issued for the whole county, and it was going to hit us at any minute.
Elliot, Catherine said, squeezing my hand. I'd better get home before it gets bad.
The sky was getting blacker by the minute.
I don't think that's a good idea. You should just ride it out here.
A small map of Oklahoma, divided by counties, was nestled in the top right corner of the flat screen, lit up like a Christmas tree. Names of towns streamed across the bottom. The meteorologist began pointing to our county, saying things like flash flood warning and take immediate precautions. We stared out the window, watching an invisible force blow the trees and scatter leaves. Lightning flashed, splashing our shadows onto the wall between two overstuffed brown leather recliners. Thunder rolled over Oak Creek, and it began to hail again. Rain hammered the roof, accumulating so fast that water spilled over the gutters, splashing on the ground. The streets were turning into shallow rivers filled with what looked more like chocolate milk than rainwater. And soon the overloaded drains began to gurgle and regurgitate it back into the street. The meteorologist pleaded with viewers not to drive in the torrential rains. The wind howled through the window seams as the glass rattled.
My dad's out there, probably driving. Can I borrow your phone? She asked.
I handed her my phone, unlocked and ready to dial. She frowned when her dad's voicemail picked up.
Dad, it's Catherine. I'm calling from Elliot's phone. I'm at his house and safe. Call me when you get this so I know you're okay. Elliot's number is...
She looked at me, and I mouthed the numbers.
363-5185. Call me, okay? I'm worried. Love you.
She returned the cell phone to me, and I stuffed it in my pocket.
He'll be okay, I said, hugging her to me.
Catherine's hands gripped my shirt, and she pressed her cheek against my shoulder. She made me feel like a superhero. She looked up at me, and my eyes fell to her lips. The bottom one was fuller than the top, and I imagined for half a second what it would be like to kiss her before I leaned in. Catherine closed her eyes, and I closed mine. But just before my lips touched hers, she whispered,
Elliot?
Yeah, I said, not moving another inch. Even through my closed lids, I could see lightning light up the entire house, and a crack of thunder immediately followed. Catherine threw her arms around me, hugging me tight. I held her until she relaxed, letting me go with a giggle. Her cheeks flushed.
Sorry.
For what?
For being here with me.
I smiled. Where else would I be? We watched the hail turn to rain that splashed against the ground in large drops. The wind forced the trees to bow before the storm. The first snapping sound surprised me. When the first tree fell, Catherine gasped.
It'll be over soon, I said, holding her.
I'd never been so thankful for a storm in my life.
Should we go to the basement? Catherine asked.
We can if it'll make you feel better. Catherine stared at my bedroom door, then her grip on me relaxed.
Maybe not.
I laughed.
What's funny? She asked.
I was just thinking the opposite.
It's not that I...
She stood next to me, hooking her arm in mine and holding tight, pressing her cheek against my arm.
I'm just gonna say it. I like you.
I leaned my head to the side, resting my cheek against her hair. She smelled like shampoo and sweat. Clean sweat. It was currently my favorite smell in the world.
I like you too.
I stayed facing forward when I spoke. You're exactly like I thought you'd be.
What do you mean?
The hail began again, this time blowing in the direction of the windows that ran along the front wall of Aunt Lee's living room. A section of glass cracked, and I stretched my arm across Catherine's chest, stepping back. A bright light flashed from across the street, and a loud boom shook the house.
Elliot,
Catherine said, fear in her voice. I won't let anything happen to you, I promise, I said. We watched the trees outside thrash in the wind.
You want to be out there, don't you, taking pictures, Catherine said.
I don't have the right camera for that. Someday.
You should work for National Geographic or something.
That's the plan. There's a whole world out there to see. I turned to face her.
Have you changed your mind yet?
You're packing a bag after graduation anyway. Why not just come with me? The first time I'd asked, we'd just met. A wide grin stretched across her face.
You're asking me again?
As many times as it takes?
You know, now that we've spent time together, the thought of traveling the world with you feels more stable than staying at home.
So, you in? I asked.
I'm in, she said. Promise?
She nodded, and I couldn't control the stupid look on my face. The hail stopped all at once, and then the wind began to die down. Catherine's smile faded with the rain.
What's wrong? I should probably go home.
Oh.
Yeah, okay. I'll walk you.
Catherine cupped both of my shoulders and then leaned in, just long enough to kiss the corner of my mouth. It was so fast, I didn't even have time to enjoy it before it was over. But it didn't matter. I could have climbed a mountain, run around the world, and swum the ocean in that moment. Because if Catherine Calhoun could decide she wanted to kiss me, anything was possible. The sun had just begun to peek out from behind the clouds, the darkness moving on to the next town over. The neighbors began to wander out to check the damage. Despite a few broken windows, a lot of detached and scattered shingles, broken power lines, and downed trees and branches, the houses mostly seemed to be intact. Green leaves littered Juniper Street, bordered by two streams of dirty water racing for the storm drains at the end of the road. Catherine noticed the same time I did that her driveway was empty. I opened the gate and followed her up the walk, and we sat on the wet porch swing.
I'll wait with you until they get home, I said. Thank you.
She reached over and slid her fingers between mine, and I pushed off with my feet, swinging,
and hoping that the best day of my life so far would pass slowly.
Chapter 4. Catherine.